Hey everyone, I'm Allie.
And I'm Andy.
And welcome back to your favorite book club and media podcast, The Marianne and Wanda. Oh my god. Do I normally say podcast after that twice in one sentence?
You just normally say, welcome back to the podcast.
Marianne and Wanda, your favorite book club and media podcast.
Whatever.
We can either keep all that in or I can re-say it. I don't care.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Okay. At this point, whatever.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, so welcome back to another week. We're very excited to spend another week with you guys. What have you been up to, Andy?
I made a lot of pottery over the weekend, so that's nice. I have the kiln running right now, which I hoped it would be done by now, but it's not. It's been running all day.
So is it just cooling off now?
No, it's not finished yet. It's almost to it's almost to the height temperature, but not yet. Jeez. Yeah, I ran it on a slow bisque fire because I have so much in there and I have already designated everything in there for a particular person or event. So I don't want to risk losing anything. So I ran it on the slow setting just in case there was any moisture left in anything.
Oh, that's fair. It's probably pretty smart of you.
Yeah, so I think the long cycle usually takes like 12 hours and I started it at 9:30. So should have like an hour left.
Okay.
I hope.
Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Let's hope it all gets through it.
Yeah. Other than that, I'm going to my grandfather's funeral this weekend. So that's a downer. But I'm also making some t-shirts for that because I don't know if you remember my grandpa because he didn't come to Tennessee a whole lot.
Oh, no, I remembered him with his big old truck.
Yeah. I think the truck is going to be there. He sold the truck probably 6 months ago because he just didn't drive it anymore. But I think the person he sold it to is bringing it and they're going to like have that and a couple of his other show cars like there on display in the parking lot. So that'll be nice. But he used to always wear a black t-shirt, dark blue jeans, and black scissors. Mm-hmm. And we always kind of joked that he dressed like a cartoon character because he wore the same thing every single day.
I mean, man knows what he likes, you know?
Yeah. So when we were talking, I was talking to my parents, like, what's everybody going to be wearing? What's the, not formality, but like, how dressy are we getting? Yeah. And I thought they were going to say, like, we should wear something nice and whatever, like you typically would. But my grandma said, no, he would rather us all be comfortable and just wear jeans and a black t-shirt. So
so that's what you're doing? So
that's what everybody's wearing.
Nice.
But
I'm here for it.
So my grandma is wearing one that has Johnny Cash on it because his favorite singer was Johnny Cash. Some of my family is wearing the racing shirts that we had for a long time since he was part of the racing crew. And then since I have a t-shirt machine, I am making some, because I don't have one of the racing shirts, I'm making some that have his company's logo on it.
Oh, okay.
Because he ran a starters and alternators business for like, I don't know, 40 years, maybe longer. Mm-hmm. And so we have the logo that they printed on Davey's race car. And so the guy who made the stickers for the race car sent me the file. So that I can print them out and make t-shirts. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to make some of those probably tonight or tomorrow. Anyway. So yeah, I've got that coming up this weekend, but what do you have going on?
Well, I successfully sent Jeff a chapter of my dissertation and I'm going to finish a second one to send him tonight. I'm not allowing myself to go to bed before I do that. So we'll see how that goes.
I'm pretty sure you said that last week.
Yeah, I did. I was supposed to finish it by the end of last week, but I'm going to finish it by today.
Okay.
So, Andy, all progress is good. And if you bring me down, it's going to make me stop working. And that's not what we want.
True. True.
Yes. So I've got that going, which is not fun. But as always, all we can do. This week we have what is called a WESA speaker. So it's just every year we invite like an established scientist. This year it's Nancy, I want to say her name is Rabelais, is how you say her last name, but I'm sure I'm saying that wrong. She's an important scientist out of Louisiana and she's coming, and there's like a public seminar on Tuesday, but then she's coming down to the C-Lab on Wednesday, and there's a seminar and a lunch and a workshop. So a whole big event this week. And mostly I feel like I have to go to a lot of stuff because Jeff is my advisor, is the one who organizes it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, well, if I'm not there, then Jeff's going to be a little bit disappointed in me.
Right.
So yeah, lots of work commitments this week that are what I would consider extracurricular. But yeah, this weekend, so Henry, my friend Henry's birthday is on Wednesday, and I think we're going to go to New Orleans this weekend to celebrate and go to a St. Patrick's Day parade. So
fun.
Big stuff.
Drink some green beer.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know if we'll actually end up going to a bar, if we'll just stay at our friend Sarah and Jay's house and drink whatever they have available.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot to ask you. What do you think of Beyoncé's new country song?
Which one? They're both incredible.
Oh, I didn't know there's more than one.
So I'm sure what you've heard is, what is it? Texas Hold'em?
Yeah.
Or not that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm sure that's what you've heard. But then she also has a second one, which is, I think, 16 Carriages is the name of the song. It was dropped the same day as Texas Hold'em. But regardless, I love them both. And I'm very excited because this is essentially supposed to be a whole country album that she essentially wrote during the pandemic and then just never released.
Hmm.
So I'm incredibly excited for it all. I think that Texas Hold'em is incredible. I think 16 Carriages is like a little more laid back. So not as like, I guess like line dancey, if you will.
Yeah.
But I like them both a lot.
I'll have to listen to that one. Yeah, I was talking about Texas Hold'em. It reminds me of the like not dance hall, but like the bar that we used to go to in college that it was called Electric Cowboys.
And nice.
It was definitely like a line dancing. Well, they would do Footloose, the line dance. And then after that, it was just like normal club bar type stuff. But it had a country feel to it. But when I was listening to the Beyoncé song, I was like, I could definitely see that being a line dance that they do there. But what I was going to say was it played on the radio in the car and Rosie loved it.
And yes, yes, Rosie.
Like, she was like laughing and clapping. And then when it went off to the next song, she kept saying, again, again, more, more. Aww. And I said, I can't, that's not how the radio works. I can't play it again.
That's my niece right there, baby.
Yeah. So yes, she's a fan.
Good. I'll take her to a Beyoncé concert in the future. No, I think it's good. We should all be very excited for the album that's coming.
Anyway. Okay. So that's enough chit chat.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Okay. So this week we watched The Jungle Book, which was the 1967 version, the original. And yes, I wanted to watch that one pretty close to when we watched Robin Hood because I saw a lot of similarities when we watched Robin Hood. And did you say that you hadn't seen this one or you just hadn't seen it in a while?
I am 99% sure. I know that I have no memory of watching it, and I'm 99% sure that we never watched it when I was a kid.
Okay. So this is one that I had on VHS and we watched it all the time, but it's been so long since I've seen it that I actually kind of forgot what happened. Like I remembered the main characters, but the order of the sequence of the scenes, I didn't remember any of that.
Yeah. Well, so let's just like read the summary real quick and then we can talk about the background. So, of course, for those of you who have been living under a rock for the past almost 80 years, oh my goodness, no, 60 years, goodness. Wow, that's still really long. So, essentially, this is the story of Bagheera the panther, who finds a man cub along the river and takes them to the only parents he knows, the wolf family who'd recently had cubs. After 11 years, the wolves realize that having a man cub named Mowgli is a threat to the tiger Shere Khan and kick him out of the pack. Can Bagheera and the sloth bear Baloo safely transport Mowgli to the man village, or will snakes, monkeys, apes, vultures, and tigers get in the way?
I didn't realize that this was 11 years after Bagheera found baby Mowgli.
Well, something like that, right? Like a decade is what they said in the movie.
Okay, I must have missed that. Because I wondered throughout, like, how old is Mowgli supposed to be? Because sometimes he would, like, whine and throw a fit like a young child, and then sometimes he seemed a little bit older, but that's good to know that it was 11.
He's a 10-year-old.
Okay. It was released in October 18th of 1967. It had a budget of $4 million and brought in $378 million in the box office. That's a huge, huge profit.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if the 378 is like adjusted for inflation, because it had to have been over like the past 60 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But regardless, that's almost 100 times its budget. So.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah. And I didn't know that. So they've made a couple Jungle Book themed movies since then. They had Jungle Book 2 in 2003, which I never saw that one. And then they had the new one, which was CGI created in 2016. Also never saw that one. But I didn't know that there was a 1994 adaptation until I'm looking at your notes.
Yeah, I didn't either. There's a lot of, there's just a lot of this. That one was a live action, which was nice, but it looks very like George of the Jungle-y when you Google it.
Hmm.
So it's like very, I don't know, like very... I guess it had to have been better than the CGI version, because as I understand it, that was not well received. But what do I know? This is the first time I've seen this movie, so what do I know?
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think it would be even worth watching the other ones, because the original's good.
Yeah, and quite frankly, a lot of the CGI they do is just not as good as the original animation.
Yeah.
And I think that holds for, like, what are the other CGI remakes they've done? Like, definitely The Little Mermaid. The animals specifically. I think that Halle Bailey. Her performance, as I understand, was good. But, like, Flounder the Fish was not. So.
Yeah, I didn't see that one either. But, yeah, I agree. I think a lot of the CGI stuff just, it doesn't look as good as the original animation, but I don't know why people keep doing it.
Yeah, well, they think they can make a quick buck, and really, Disney just needs to like get some new stories out there instead of trying to do a bunch of remakes or whatever they want to call them.
Yeah, I agree.
So, this was in fact the 19th film in the Disney animated classics, and it was one of the last projects, along with the Aristocats, to be approved and worked on by Walt Disney himself. So as we mentioned, the Robin Hood movie is the first one that was like fully without Disney's approval. But this one, Disney had some input in before he died. And I think it was 66 was his death. So
was Robin Hood 1969? 73. 73. Okay. I knew it was close.
So very close, but... Yeah, but still after Disney's death, so.
Yeah. So the movie was based on the book by Rudyard Kipling, which I remember learning about him in school, but I couldn't remember what it was we studied that he wrote, but I think it was some form of poetry. Do you remember that?
That sounds right. I don't think we read this.
No.
So we must have done either it must have been his short stories or his poetry.
I was trying to look up some of his work to see if I recognized anything that we would have read. I'm sure it was in high school and
yeah,
looked familiar, but I mean, I know the name. So anyway, I didn't put it together that he wrote, I don't know if his book was called The Jungle Book, but that
was
essentially what his book was. And I forgot that it was based on that until I watched the opening credits again. And he wrote The Jungle Book in 1894, which that's crazy to even think about.
Yeah, to me, Rudyard Kipling is much more modern than
1800s. I mean, I guess I think of him as like 1920s or 30s, which is still not right. But anyway, and then he also lived in British India. I don't think he grew up there, but I think he lived most of his adult life there from what I understood. So I liked that he based the story in that geographic area.
Yes. And for the record, just that you know, I think I put this in there somewhere, but Disney's first had the idea, and he had it developed by Bill Peet, who had done Sword in the Stone, which had just been released and was not well received widely.
I've never seen that one.
We should watch it because I've watched it once or twice very recently, but not in a critical eye.
Yeah.
Regardless, my main point is that it's like very loosely based on the book. So Pete had read the Jungle Book, but whenever Disney hired Larry Clemens and his cronies, Ken Anderson, Ralph Wright, and Ken Anderson. I'm sorry. I swear to God, Ralph Wright is a hard name to say.
That is hard.
When he hired the four of them, he essentially did it because they had not read the Jungle Book and he did not want them to read it. So Disney gave them like a brief overview of the story and was like, okay, we have these characters, do something.
Yeah. Huh.
And it works out. And there's like some characters, so like King Louis, I think, didn't exist in the original story, and Pete put him in there. And the idea, the ending of like Mowgli falling in love, and that's how he like left the jungle. Mm-hmm. Like both of those were Pete's ideas, but it was all like a much more somber and dark and serious, and Disney didn't like that. And so that's why he took it away from them and then gave it to these other guys who hadn't read the story.
I was reading your notes earlier, and your sentence about King Louis and Mowgli being in love, not the original script.
Oh.
I read that as King Louis and Mowgli were in love.
No. King Louis, the character, and then Mowgli allegedly falling in love. Let's be honest. We'll talk about that later. But
yeah. Anyway. And it was directed by Wolfgang. Another Wolfgang.
Yes.
The same Wolfgang, right?
The same one, yes.
Yeah. Wolfgang Reitherman.
Yes.
Yep, who also directed Snow White, Pinocchio, Dumbo, Cinderella, Lady and the Tramp, which I loved.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you liked that one as much as me.
I don't know that I've seen it as much as you.
I don't know. I feel like growing up, all of the Disney movies that I liked the most were the animal ones. Lady and the
mm-hmm.
Tramp, The Jungle Book. Those kind of movies, that I loved all of those. Like, I watched the princess ones too, but mostly the animal ones.
I think I watched more of the princess ones, which is kind of funny because I do love animal stories in general, mm-hmm. generally speaking.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yes. So the original music was done by Terry Gilkison, I think is how you say his last name. He had done like the original score and he'd written The Bare Necessities, the classic song that we all know from this movie. But it was scrapped along with whenever Disney had done the big changeover from the original writer to the four new ones.
Mm-hmm.
So they also scrapped the guy who'd done the music, Terry Gilkison, and they hired the Sherman Brothers, who'd done a bunch of songs for Mary Poppins, which had come out recently. And it had been a big hit. So Disney was like, great, we're going to put you on this as well. And you're going to just write all the songs. And that'll be great. Funnily enough, it was nominated for an Oscar, but it was for what Terry Gilkison had written, which is The Bare Necessities.
Yeah.
Then George Bruns had done most of the other score, aside from the original songs in it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good slap to the face.
Honestly.
Also, like, okay, like a lot of those older movies, well, not even the older ones, like Shrek, it happened too. What is it with all these movies, like scrapping the whole thing and then starting over?
And I guess they just don't, I guess the first version just isn't good. You know, writing is an iterative process. That's what Jeff is always telling me.
I don't know. I can't give up my work that easily. If I work on something for a long time, I'm not scrapping it. I will salvage it.
All right, that's fair. Disney's just not the same way. He is not happy and he will let you know.
Yeah. Okay, so before we get into the actual movie, I did not realize it until watching it this time that it came with a warning content from, or sorry, it came with a warning sign, I guess, at the beginning of the movie. And it didn't clearly explain why, other than it was saying that it's not representation. It's not an accurate representation and could be seen as offensive, but I don't know. I had never really thought about that when I watched it as a kid. And when I kept that in the back of my mind as I was watching it. And I was like, maybe I'm just not seeing what the stereotype is, but I couldn't figure it out until I was reading your notes about what was actually, like, wrong.
So that came from deadline.com, and it's allegedly the portrayal of King Louis, who is the orangutan, who is, like, it's considered to be an offensive caricature of racist stereotypes of African Americans. And I looked that up whenever the movie started, because I was like, honestly, I'm not entirely certain what could be wrong here. Like, I know the movie's set in India,
right?
But as I understand it, it's like a kid who's in the wild. So
I was in the same mindset. I was like, what part of this is not okay? I don't remember anything being blatantly, obviously wrong.
Yes.
But I think looking at it, I don't know what about King Louis was based off of African-American stereotypes. Maybe that's just me being dumb, but
yeah. So I also had the same thought, and I don't, again, it could be just that we're white women,
right?
But I think, largely speaking, the character of King Louis was played by Louis Prima, who was a New Orleans jazz musician. And I think that I personally see a lot of New Orleans in King Louis, the way he's like singing and all the music that's playing.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it was more of just New Orleans in general. And because Louis Prima is from New Orleans, in my mind, it wasn't as big of a deal as I think Disney's making it out to. So yeah, like, I don't know if that's just our own ignorance or not, but I also didn't really think that there was like a huge stereotype here.
Okay, I guess, yeah, I'm in the same boat then. I might not realize it if it is a bigger issue than maybe I realize. But yeah, also, isn't New Orleans, doesn't that have a French heritage?
It's French, but it's French Creole, and typically has like a very big Black population overall. Yeah. So,
okay. I don't know. I didn't see it as anything like outright, obviously, offensive, but then again, like you said, I'm a white woman, so maybe I didn't realize it.
Yeah, that could just be our own ignorance. Honestly, I feel like it's very offensive to snakes, so
okay, but yeah, I haven't seen one before with that warning label on it.
Yeah, well, allegedly Dumbo also has one for,
oh,
I forget what it is. That one's actually racist, though. I think there's actually enslaved people in that one, but
I've never actually seen Dumbo.
Oh, I also don't know. So the other thing in this is, of course, that not of course, something else that I noticed in this movie is that the elephants, when they're on the march, they're all British, and it seems like they're very militaristic.
Mm-hmm.
And they're British, which did occupy India for nearly 100 years. So from 1858 to 1947.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that also factored into it. Like, to me, that was kind of offensive just because it's like we have these British elephants that are marching around. But
yeah,
I don't know. The colonel, I forget what his name is, like Colonel, it began with an H, but he got a Victoria Cross Award, he mentioned in the movie. And that is a British military award. So it's, to me, honestly, I think that that also might have been part of the warning that Disney was giving us. But
I could see that, especially because the elephants are literally trampling over all the land, and like that's very illustrative of British takeover. So I could, see... but yeah, that to me is a little more obvious.
Yeah, same.
So a repeat from Robin Hood, Phil Harris is in this movie as Baloo. And he played, what was the bear's name? Little John. He played Little John.
Yep. So a bear both times.
Yeah. So yeah, we have Phil Harris as Baloo, Sebastian Cabot.
Yeah.
Oh. Cabot. Okay. As Bagheera. Oh, also side note, I liked that all of the characters' names, aside from King Louis, they seemed to be fitting of Indian culture, maybe. Like, I'm glad that they didn't name the little boy like Brian or something like that.
Yeah, so of course his name was Mowgli, and he was played by Bruce Rathermann, who is the son of the director, and he replaced the original voice actor. So the original voice actor was David Bailey, but he The article that I read said, due to nature, his voice dropped halfway through the recording and he had to be replaced just because he didn't sound like a 10-year-old boy anymore.
That's funny.
Yeah. Here for that.
Yeah. But yeah, I am glad that at least the names were like fitting for the time and place that the movie's taking place in.
Got George Sanders as Shere Khan. He's just like an old-timey actor. So, of course, love to see him.
We had Sterling Holloway as Ka the Snake, who also voiced Winnie the Pooh.
In what Winnie the Pooh?
The original. He was the original Winnie the Pooh voice.
Oh, huh. What do you know?
Yeah, for like 50 years or something like that.
When I heard it, I was convinced it was the same voice actor as the snake in The Jungle Book, and he's not.
Yeah, I looked that up too when I was, or no, in, you mean in Robin Hood?
Yeah. What did I say?
You said Jungle Book.
Oh, yeah, in Robin Hood.
Yeah, I looked that up when we did Robin Hood because I was like, that's got to be the snake from Jungle Book. And it's not.
Yeah, I guess just all snakes sound the same.
Mm-hmm.
It might have also been influenced because Ka the snake here was also able to hypnotize with his eyes as the snake was in the, I almost said the Jungle Book again, in Robin Hood.
Yeah.
But what do we know?
And then, as you said, there was Louis?
Yes. Louis? No, I'd say Louis.
Okay, yeah. Louis Prima, who is a jazz musician from New Orleans as King Louis. Mm-hmm. And the funniest part was the vultures. So I see that they were originally meant to be voiced by the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
And you made note that John Lennon did not want to do an animated movie, which is funny.
Which is also crazy because did you ever see any of the Beatles animated movies?
No.
Okay. We had the Yellow Submarine on VHS, and you would remember if you'd seen it because there's like a hand that's a gun. It's like all very crazy. It feels like an acid trip the whole time, which I thought when I was like 10 and I saw this. But John Lennon was like, I didn't want to do an animated movie. And then 3 years later, an animated movie starring the Beatles comes out. So it's like, okay, John Lennon, did you really not want to do one, or did you just not want to work with Disney?
Right. So when I was watching it, the whole time I was thinking, man, this whole group of vultures resembles the Beatles. But then I was like, ah, they're probably not the Beatles voicing them. So maybe it's just based on like a barbershop quartet since they all sing together.
Mm-hmm. But
that's funny to know that they originally were going to be by the Beatles.
Yeah, which is why they have some of the haircuts that they have. And I think the song that they sing originally was more like rock influenced. But when the Beatles didn't accept the offer, they changed it to that. It felt, again, like more like a barbershop quartet kind of situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I also found out when I was researching this that there was a character named Rocky the Rhino, and Disney had them scrap the character just because he thought that the scene that Rocky like was heavily featured in just didn't add much to the movie. So Rocky was kicked out, but he was supposed to be the comic relief of the movie.
So, to get into some more of the notes, you mentioned already that the snake had the hypnotizing effect on anybody, really.
Yeah.
But other than that, I noted that there was a lot of similarities between Robin Hood and even Tarzan and this movie, which I know Tarzan came later, but I feel like they all probably fed off of each other, or at least Tarzan fed off of some of the Robin Hood and Jungle Book features, such as the snake.
Well, it's just that would be wild because Tarzan came out in 1999, so it's like 32 years later. I wouldn't put it past them, but it would be incredible.
Like, having a little boy who grew up in the jungle and was raised by
animals,
like, that's very similar.
Fair.
Anyway, but the snake hypnotizing people and like making their eyes do all these weird colors. Mm-hmm. Also, Baloo dressing up in a costume in the King Louis scene was also seen in the Robin Hood movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then having characters that just kind of roam around and don't have a home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And militarized elephants are in both of these.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even remember that part.
Yeah. There's a lot of similarities. And yeah, like it's two different stories. And I don't blame them for using animation as we talked about in Robin Hood. But
also, so I guess back up for a second. Right when the movie opens, Mowgli is found by Bagheera, and I don't know if you caught it, but there's a boat crash, And so it looks like Mowgli is the lone survivor of a boat crash.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it was that or if he had like floated down the river or something, but if he's the lone survivor of a boat crash, that's also hearkening back to Tarzan.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of forgot how he got to be in the wild before watching it again this time. But I looked for that, and right when the movie opens, he's in the little basket and mm-hmm. he's propped up on like a partially broken wooden like rowboat, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, it looks like there's a very obvious boat crash because half of the boat's gone.
Very Moses-y. Yeah, and I will say, when I started this, I don't know, I guess I just had, this is how I'm pretty sure that I had never really seen this movie, is that I thought that the panther Bagheera was the bad guy. I don't know where that came from. I don't know if it's just because he was like a big cat or something. Yeah. Nothing against cats. I love cats. I have a cat tattoo. But I definitely thought that he was the bad guy. And I know that Shere Khan, who's also a big cat, ends up being the bad guy. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, like, that was surprising to me to find out that Bagheera had worked so hard both to get Mowgli to the wolves and then also to get Mowgli from the wolves to the man village.
Yeah, I wonder what originally, like, he could have walked away from the little baby, but like, for an animal to have sympathy for something helpless and like go out of his way to deliver it to the family of wolves for them to raise. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's kind of sweet, but wonder why he took that on himself.
No, no. Like, animals, I feel like, are very intuitive and very caring. Like, you see all these videos of dogs who just like watch over newborn babies in the family.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's something along those lines.
Yeah, but a panther would have just eaten that baby.
Maybe. Andy.
It's the circle of life.
It's very anti-cat of you. Yeah. And I also, so something else that I thought of when I was watching this is that I have always known the song, The Bare Necessities,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know how, because I don't think I've seen this movie. So, and I don't think that I like watched a bunch of YouTube videos of it. So I don't know where I picked that one up. It's all very confusing to me.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's a very popular song.
That's true.
Yeah. I like that song a lot. Mm-hmm. Although I didn't really fully listen to all the lyrics until this time, and it talks about like, different types of fruit and stuff that you can find in the jungle. I don't know, that kind of stuff I had never really paid much attention to.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the chorus that really reels you right in, you know.
Yeah. So we mentioned the elephant military for a second, and I really liked that the little elephant at the end sings in a military style. That's one of my favorite lines.
Yeah, the little elephant. Again, another parallel to Tarzan. Like, the little elephant in this reminded me of the little elephant in Tarzan. And I liked how he was working with Mowgli to, like, get in line with the military here. And I also did love that Mowgli, like, the way he was walking around on all fours and, like, trying to stick his nose out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was all very funny to me. I appreciated that.
I think the funniest part of the elephant military was that the colonel was trying to keep his men in line, but then his wife puts him in his place. Like, what would you do if our son was missing?
I mean, she brings up a good point.
Yep.
Moms are always right, as it turns out.
Okay, and then, so Shere Khan. Shere Khan is
yes.
The guy. And I see you kind of had a similar point of me, is we can't really blame Shere Khan for not liking man. He's valid, it's justified.
Yeah, generally speaking. But I do wonder, like, what sort of run-in Shere Khan had previously with the hunters.
Is tiger poaching a thing in India, or did I make
it? Oh, for sure. No, yeah. For sure.
I feel like it is. So maybe he's been like targeted heavily by people who are hunting him down specifically.
That's fair, and he's definitely particularly afraid of fire, so I'm sure that he's also encountered that as a result. Like, maybe they were trying to get him to come out of the underbrush or whatever.
Yeah.
We just, like, never get a clear explanation as to a specific event that Shere Khan has this sort of trauma from.
Yeah, and then to go with that, do we think that King Louis, he really wants fire?
Mm.
He wants fire so that he can, like, set the jungle on fire and take over from Shere Khan, or why do we think he wants fire?
You know, I had assumed that it was because he like wanted to be like man and, you know, walk like you, talk like you, so on and so forth. Another banger of a song. I had kind of assumed that it was just so that he could be more like man, and that's kind of like the big thing that everyone says separates us from apes and monkeys. But I think you might be right that it's like kind of a defense mechanism against Shere Khan and all these other predators in the forest, in addition to like cooking food or whatever, which I don't even know that they would care about. They eat a lot of fruits, so.
Yeah.
Who's to say?
Yeah, I mean, obviously he has it out for young Mowgli, who is not going to be able to defend himself, but in general, he's justified for not liking mankind.
No. As we speak about King Louie, I think one of the funniest scenes is when he and Baloo are going back and forth trying to get Mowgli out of the ape/monkey camp. Mm-hmm. And he's like holding up the temple, and then Baloo comes in and like ends up holding up the temple and all of that big switchover. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that whole scene. I thought it was very good. I enjoyed the dancing.
Mm-hmm. I love that song. I think that might be my favorite song, even more than Bare Necessities.
Mm.
Which again, I also didn't really pay much attention to the lyrics until this time, where King Louie is just telling Mowgli, like, I want to be like you. Everything about you or mankind, that's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. So maybe that is feeding into the stereotypes that we have overlooked.
Maybe so.
Anyway.
As a child, though, I definitely didn't catch it.
For sure.
Do you have a favorite quote from the movie?
Very much so, I do. I love it when Baloo says, can't a man make one mistake? And goodness, Bagheera replies, not in the jungle. That makes sense. Yes, of course. Like, I laughed out loud when I heard that.
Yeah, I think mine is similar. It might have even been in the same conversation. Or maybe it was, no, it was when they had the first interaction with Mowgli. Baloo says, he can stay with me. I'll learn him all I know. And Bagheera says, that shouldn't take too long.
Get wrecked.
I was like, ooh, burn.
Yeah.
Sick burn.
I mean, honestly, like, you can't protect him from this big old tiger that's got it out for him. So
I'll teach him everything I know. It shouldn't take too long. You're not going to teach him very much.
Or you don't what, have- 5-10 minutes? Yeah, I think that I have just one big critique of this movie, and it's that Mowgli throughout the whole thing is like, I don't want to leave the forest or the jungle. I love it here. This is everything I've known. And towards, or at the end, essentially, he sees this like young girl from the man village, and he sees her collecting water, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, well, you know, I'm in love. I'm into this girl. Like, of course I'll leave the jungle and go live in the village. And that just kind of felt like a cop-out to me. Like, of course, like what, a child, a 10-year-old child being in love is going to leave everything he knows to go live in this village? I don't, it didn't sit right with me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was a quick way to end the movie, but at the same time, I thought at first it was more of just like, he's so intrigued because he's never seen somebody else that looks like him. But then, yeah, he does have like the lovebird eyes at one point. So it's like, mm-hmm. Come on, he's 10.
And it's like heavily implied by Baloo and I keep wanting to say Bagheera, as like, he's like in love. It's like young puppy love, which, yeah, just like, how heteronormative can we get in this movie?
Right. This is 1967.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I guess the other thing, did you have like a favorite animated scene that you really liked?
Probably the King Louie scene.
Okay, that's fair. The big waterfall animation when Mowgli like first, I think it's when he first walks off alone.
Mm-hmm.
And you see like the kind of like pink blue waterfall behind him that's like super huge, and he's just kind of walking slowly in front of it.
Yeah.
That really, really took my breath away, and it really makes me miss the days of 2D animation, just because we don't do that as much anymore.
Yeah, I noticed it too. And anytime I actually watched that clip over again, because the water, when it's coming down the waterfall, it almost just looks like it is like little clouds and then disappears. I don't know. It was very pretty.
It's very pretty. All of it's very pretty. It's like very jungly. I love to see nature in this way. But I think that scene in particular was just very nice. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite character?
Oh man, I hate to say that it's the snake, but quite frankly,
the same thing.
Love Ka the snake.
Yeah, I liked the, all of his sound effects, like when he would get all crumpled up and he would make the accordion noises to uncrumple himself.
Mm-hmm. And when he was speaking to Shere Khan and he like, he was very expressive with his body throughout that whole thing. I appreciated that a lot.
I also liked when he was hypnotizing Mowgli and he like turned his body to like a staircase and like made it do things that are not doable for a snake.
Right. And it was particularly satisfying because it matched up with the song. Like he said something about like sliding down and that's when Mowgli slid down his body into like this loop.
Yeah.
It was very satisfying.
Yeah. I think he was my favorite too, even though he's creepy and I don't like him, but I do like him.
No, and he's got like what, maybe like 4 minutes of screen time in this like 72 or 76 minute long movie.
Mm-hmm.
Very minor character overall, but big impact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's all of my notes. Yeah. You have anything else or should we rate it?
I think we're ready to rate it. How many bear necessities do you give this?
All right. How many bear necessities? Well, I will say I remembered liking the movie a little bit more when I was a kid than I did this time. Not that it was bad, but
kind of. But it lost some of its magic?
But what?
It lost some of its magic?
Maybe not lost its magic, but I just realized that there's so many other better animated movies.
Okay.
It's not bad. I still liked it a lot. What did I give Robin Hood?
Robin Hood, you gave a 4.3.
4.3? Okay, I'm going to go a little bit higher because I like this one. I'm going to do 4.4.
Okay, 4.4. Barely higher, but still very respectable.
It was one of my favorite ones growing up. We watched all the time. But yeah, I don't know. Something about it at the time, like, the plot was, I mean, it's just him going to the village.
Fair. I mean, there's a little bit of excitement whenever Mowgli like kind of almost burns down the forest to get rid of Shere Khan, but then the rain comes and Baloo's still alive, so it's like, okay,
yeah,
what's the drawback here? What are we losing?
Exactly.
I think that I gave Robin Hood a 4.9, and I honestly do think that this is, ranks lower, so I think I'll maybe give this a 4.1 out of 5 stars. I think it was good. I think that we might be missing some sort of content that we should be seeing. But overall, I think it was well animated and I enjoyed the music. And I don't know. I guess I'll have to watch the second one to see what happens.
I think I will. You talking about Jungle Book 2 or the one that came out in the 90s?
Well, I guess. The 2016 version and Jungle Book 2. Okay. I don't care about the 1999 live action remake.
Yeah, I think I would have probably rated mine closer to you if it didn't have the nostalgia factor for me.
Fair.
So, yeah. All right.
What are we reading this, the next, I guess, few weeks?
So, yeah, our next short story, because that'll be what we record next, is Departure Lounge from the Awayland series by Ramona Azabel. And then the book for the month is The Unmaking of June Farrow by Adrienne Young.
Mm-hmm.
Have you started it?
I have not, but I've acquired it, so I got one step in the right direction.
Better than me. Mine's being delivered tomorrow.
Nice. Mine was all checked out from the library, so I had to acquire it alternatively.
Yeah, I still am waiting my turn in the Libby app to listen to it. I need to check and see what number in line I am, but it probably still got a while to go. So it's probably going to be passed by the time. Oh yeah, it tells me that I still have 8 weeks and I am 75th in line.
So yeah, maybe like a couple days.
It says that I started 283rd in line.
Oh.
And now I'm 75th in line. There are 367 people waiting total to borrow this book.
Must be a good book then. I'm excited to read it.
It says there's 20 copies available. No, 20 people waiting per copy. Sorry. Anyway.
That's so funny. Well, so then there's like 11 copies or whatever. A good number of copies.
That math.
Yeah. Well, it's an audiobook, so that would make sense.
Yeah. I was trying to check it out ahead of time so that I could listen to a lot of it on my drive this weekend, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I placed the order for the book today and it'll be here tomorrow.
All right. Well, then you'll just have to read the print copy and hope that Adam will drive.
Yeah, well, I can't drive. I can't read in the car. I'll get car sick. But
ugh, I forgot that you're like this. You're a fool.
I know. I'm flawed.
You can say that again, Andy.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Marianne and Wanda. We would love to hear your feedback and if you have any books or topics for us to review.
You can reach us at Marianne and Wanda Podcast on Instagram. Or send us an email at marianneandwandapodcast@gmail.com. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.